This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Tina Starosta, Nemo Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Becca Staley, Dennis Moynihan, Brenda Murad. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now! In Park City, Utah.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with host Joanne Hardesty and guest host Marie Daniels. Today's guest is Margaret Calvert, principal of Jefferson High School and Middle College for Advanced Studies, and we're going to talk about some new educational opportunities in and around Portland.
January 18, 2013. KBOO Navigator Report. Overwhelming support and a record number of donations were received at the close of 2012. Thank you, KBOO donors. 6 months of hard work have resulted in a more knowledgeable board and updated board policies, completing a grant from the Meyer Memorial Trust. A new partnership with mainstreamed media will give reporters with developmental disabilities a voice on the KBOO Evening News. The KBOO Council of Elders will be gathering in March. For more information, contact Lynn Fitch, 503-231-8032, extension 222, or navigator at kboo.org. This has been the Weekly Navigator Report. Thank you.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty.
I'm Marie Daniels.
And welcome to Voices from the Edge. This morning, we are so thrilled to bring you what we think will be a very innovative and wonderful dialogue to have. I am pleased to welcome into the studio today Margaret Calvert, principal of Jefferson High School, and she's brought with us one of her community partners, Troy Hollis, who's the high school program manager for SEI. And for folks who have been living under rocks, SEI stands for Self Enhancement Inc. And so thank you both for joining us to the program today.
Thank you.
And thank you, Marie, for coming and agreeing to co-host.
No, thank you for inviting me.
You are welcome. So let's just kind of jump right in. So Margaret, again, thank you so much for being here. So let's just jump right in because it's rare that I get an opportunity to say, tell me about all the great things that are happening at Jefferson High School.
That's a great lead-in. Thank you. I want to start by saying, you know, the process at Jefferson for so many years has been one of building, and we're excited about the place we are right now. 2 years ago, the Portland Public Schools went through an entire high school system design process, and in those conversations, Jefferson actually came to the center of the of the design process, and as we went through, the question became, how do we create opportunities for students to really realize their potential and to make strong pathways directly to college? So in an exciting process, we went through and looked at what were the things that were being highly successful at Jefferson. And there were two things that really rose to the surface, almost like corks floating to the top. One of them being Self-Enhancement Incorporated. And we knew that every student who participated in SEI graduated at well over 90%. So SEI has a tremendous track record of working with students, usually longitudinally, all the way from second grade. And so we said, hey, here's a program that seems to be working. How can we take it to scale? Instead of having 10% of our students active in SEI, can we get it to be a larger proportion? And the second thing that we looked at was a partnership that we've had in place with Portland Community College for we're actually working towards a decade, but we're for about 7 years, where students had the opportunity to enroll in college-level courses well at Jefferson. And again, with this program, we saw that well over 90% of the students who participated were graduating and then going on to college and finding success. So with those two pieces in place, we said, okay, can we take that to scale? And again, instead of offering it to 10% of the students, offer it to 100% of the students. Mm-hmm. And in the process, Jefferson became what's called the focus school. So the neighborhood students still receive preference in. So any student who lives in the Jefferson neighborhood has first rights in. And then it also opened it up to the city, saying, here's an opportunity. Who would like to come and take advantage of this opportunity? So we're in our second year of this full high school program that includes these two tremendous partners. And our sophomores, the class of 2015, are our inaugural class. And so they are just coming in to really taking full advantage of the middle college. And we're looking at, really, we have about 130 sophomores. So we're designing ways that this 130 sophomores will take advantage of some opportunities at PCC in the next year. So we're right on the cusp of that.
So Margaret, if you wouldn't mind, let's kind of walk through the process. Mm-hmm. So the class of 2015, you've got 130 sophomores in mm-hmm. the class so far. Mm-hmm. And so the goal for the class of 2015 is that 100% graduation from high school, and then what?
So there are a couple things. One is that we said, so what does it mean to be a middle college program?
Right.
So in order to receive a Jefferson diploma, the students that entered, the sophomores entered, were committing themselves to taking and completing 12 credits at PCC as part of their, in addition to their high school credits. So the high school graduation credits are their 24 credits that students need to take. In addition, they need 12 college-level credits.
Uh-huh.
So our vision for them is that they come into high school, we provide lots of academic support at the freshman year, we try to accelerate their learning, we provide supports with SEI, with the eye to giving them opportunities at PCC during their junior and senior year. So 12 credits is roughly, depending on the number of credits in a class, is 3 or 4 classes at PCC.
Mm-hmm.
Students can take more. They can take up to, you know, potentially completing a full year. It's a pretty aggressive track to do that. So the goal is to say, one, can we impact graduation? Can we see more students graduating? Can we help them find a path directly to college? Can we get them college experiences, help them navigate a system, understand what it means to go to PCC?
Demystify the college process.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you may have folks, this is the first generation that's been inside a college building, right?
Absolutely. And providing kids and students opportunities to have access, experience success. It's not about opportunity alone. Our commitment is to saying it's not about getting them to PCC. It's about them being successful at PCC. Mm-hmm. And then the really exciting piece is that we've had a number of university sponsor or universities step in and say, if partner with us with the community college, saying, you know, if you complete, we will continue to support the students. So we had U of O step in and say, if the students complete and can enter U of O and are Pell Grant eligible, which is an income requirement, then we will continue to support them down at U of O, and that we will provide tuition and books. Mm-hmm. At no cost to the students, and they can for the next 3 years. So the U of O was the first university to really step in and say, we see this as a viable program. They're excited about the possibilities. They also know that students who have had college experiences are more successful in college.
Mm-hmm.
So coming out of PCC, that they're more likely to not only enter U of O, but then also complete, so there's a persistence.
Mm-hmm.
So U of O was the first. Then OSU said, yep, okay, we should do that as well. And PSU said, yes, we should offer some scholarships as well. And then Warner Pacific and Pacific, and most recently Willamette. So we have public and private partnerships. Mm-hmm. They're really reaching out and saying, this is a program that we see is transformative. And is it 20, you know, is really a forward-looking program. Mm-hmm. We're not reaching back into, I mean, Jefferson's 104 years old. We're not reaching back into the last century. We're really reaching forward. And the commitment from partners, be it SEI, PCC, or universities, is very high.
Wonderful.
Well, I've been listening to you talk, and I was actually doing some research last night because I haven't been as familiar with Jefferson, and I kept reading through all of the, you know, articles and things I found, and I was like, wow, they basically thought of everything. Because every question I had that was things that I know that don't work for students is really where SEI comes in. Mm-hmm. And the partnership about, you know, when you have first-generation college, or you have students who come out of very poor families and they have no idea how to support the educational process, how to navigate these institutions and things like that. Not only to mention, like, you know, life gets in the way for everybody all the time and it really doesn't neatly sit on the sidelines. So what happens, and every time one of those questions would come up, I was like, oh, that's where SEI steps in. Mm-hmm. And so I felt very impressed at the thoroughness of how everything got connected, but I did have a lot of questions about what the SEI piece looks like. Mm-hmm. Not to take the spotlight from you, Margaret.
Well, wonderful. That's exactly where we're going to head. And for our listening audience, I'm talking to Margaret Calvert, who is the principal at Jefferson High School. And there's a new tagline, and I keep forgetting it, Middle College for Advanced Studies. So got to add that on nowadays when you're talking about Jefferson High School. And so we're going to be talking for a few more minutes, and then we will open up the phone lines. But if you want to join us, give us a call at 503-281-8187. I think that's right, but Steve will tell me. It's just been that kind of morning so far. 231-8187. Okay, I got it now. Thanks, Steve. I tell you both, the silent power behind the throne. And so, Troy, welcome to the studio once again.
Morning.
I like that nice strong voice. Marie gave us a wonderful segue into SEI. Margaret talked about this fabulous partnership, and what role does SEI play in this partnership?
Well, we're at Jefferson, and we're there to help support in this effort. We've been in Jefferson now for the past 20 years, and in the past, we've had a good working relationship with Jefferson. They have allowed us in the doors and able to service kids. Mm-hmm. What we have now is a positive partnership relationship going on. And it's more interactive with teachers, counselors, administration, and we're there for the win-win of the child. Mm-hmm. Fully comprehensive program, wraparound services. Students get a coordinator in which we think that they're the agent for the student. Mm-hmm. And whatever it is that student needs, that coordinator is there to provide the services. And if the coordinator can't provide the services, we look for outside resources in which to better the child, mm-hmm. better the student.
So let me back you up just a minute, Troy, because I think we may all have different understandings of what it means to support a child's education, mm-hmm. right? Could you tell me that in, like, what does it mean when you say SEI is there to support this child getting through the educational process? What does that look like?
So we want every kid to realize their full potential.
Right.
And we know that education is a key component to getting there.
Right.
And so once you're in the SEI program, you have in-school services,
okay.
after-school services, you have summer programming. There's a parent component to that, mm-hmm. and there's also a post-high component to that, in which we try to give the kids, students, all these services in order for them not to have any pitfalls, any holes, because sometimes we have difficult times, and the coordinators will be there to pick them up mm-hmm. and show them, you know, there's another route, another way out, and to encourage them and to make sure that, you know, they can succeed and they can, you know, look to college as an option
right.
after high school. So that's what we're there for. And, you know, the coordinators are there 24/7. They're mm-hmm. there on the weekends. We're at the basketball games. We're at the dance recitals. We're there to advocate for the parent from the dining room table to the classroom desk, mm-hmm. back to the dining room table. We know that a lot of the parents, single family households, and that coordinator kind of fills that void for them, that extension. And so
that was, I think, the piece that I was trying to get at. So it's we understand that the child is in the context of the family and the family is in the context of the community. And mm-hmm. so you're saying that the support actually supports the child and their family mm-hmm. and actually being able to support that child to continue their education. Am I getting that right? Okay. I wanted to make sure that people understood that because, you know, most of us think, you know, you send a child to kids' school, you've done your job right. as far as getting them ready, mm-hmm. right, for the education process.
Yeah, that was one of the things that when I first started getting interested in education is really trying to understand, and maybe this is something to talk about a little bit in case people don't quite get their minds around it, is that if the family doesn't understand how to support a child through the academic process, especially when you leave and go off to something unfamiliar like college, mm-hmm. then what does that really mean? And I know that one of the examples I was given years ago is for young, you know, kids who are still in high school, is if you have a family that's poor and is, you know, having to turn the lights off really early. And so the only light that children have is maybe they have the TV set on, you know, or something like that. Like, it's very hard to study by the light of a TV set. And since you can't afford to have, you know, the rest of the lights on in the household, you have these kids who are disadvantaged because they can't really study. They don't have a room to study. They're having to be in front of the TV. And that's kind of a, you know, generic, maybe a little bit of an extreme example. But just so when people are listening, they like, well, what do you mean you don't understand, you know, how to support your kid in school? What does that mean? And maybe that's something that you can talk about a little bit more.
Yeah, so we can take it a step further. What about just having your lights off, period?
Right.
What about not having no running TV water?
Right. Yeah, I was starting with an easy.
Right.
You know, but what about living in your car? I mean.
Right. Exactly. And so that's real. Mm-hmm. And we deal with that, you know, on a daily basis. And then it's just about, you know, supporting the child and making sure that, you know, because what we have in America isn't a kid problem. It's an adult problem.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they're not to blame for the lights being off.
That's right.
Right. And so through the relationship with the coordinator finds out these things, you know. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out why a student isn't doing well sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's just a conversation. It's a relationship. We feel kids learn better when surrounded by a positive, nurturing adult. Mm. And once that relationship gets there and the kid is able to open up to the coordinator, then the coordinator is able to find out what's mm-hmm. going on in the home. Mm-hmm. And then if it's some things that we can help out with, then that absolutely, let's get the lights turned mm-hmm. back on. Let's get that water turned back on so they can have a stable environment at home.
So I think that's new information for a lot of people as far as SEI, because mm-hmm. Most people think that you're a tutoring program, that you do sports and summer camp programs. And so this whole idea of actually having a coordinator that's actually troubleshooting mm-hmm. Problems for young people as they're making it through high school, I think is pretty phenomenal. And, you know, and then I got to ask, well, who pays for that? How does that get paid for, right? Because I think all kids need that kind of support. And so I guess we'll get to that and mm-hmm. some point about how does the partnership work and, you know, where do the resources come from to support that effort. But I want to get back just a minute and talk a little bit about who's in Jefferson High School now. What's the demographics of Jefferson High School? Who are the students?
So Jefferson is the only majority Black high school in the state of Oregon. And it continues. The demographics have not shifted much in the last couple years. And the commitment when we went to the Focus Option program was to say, we're going to serve the community mm-hmm. That's adjacent to Jefferson and beyond, but mm-hmm. we're going to make sure that we're serving the community that is in North Northeast Portland really well. So right now, you know, that we're about 65 or 60% Black, you know, about 20% white, and then the 20%
everybody else.
Yes, exactly.
And so I'm curious, because as you know, there's been this out-migration of African Americans from Northeast Portland. And so are your students traveling to get to Jefferson, or did they just happen to be fortunate enough to still live in the Jefferson area?
So one of the things that is interesting about Jefferson is that we have right now about 450 students or so in the building, and 314 are coming from the neighborhood area itself, and 123 are transferring in. So we have a surprising number of students that are coming in from other places. We have, you know, I think we are continuing to look at, are we drawing students in that are close to us, but also, you know, from outside. And so we're seeing, and I think Troy can speak quite eloquently about this as well from the SEI experience, there has been a shift in where people are living. And some students are traveling quite, you know, as they say, they're in the numbers, and they're coming quite a distance to come to Jefferson for a variety of reasons. And the commitment, I would just say the thing that's amazing about students and the students who are actually in Jefferson, incredibly resilient, tremendously honest, very hardworking students who are committed to figuring out how to navigate processes. Some students are traveling on TriMet, so all high school students in Portland receive, you know, a bus pass, which is huge. I mean, this that piece, that partnership is a game changer for so many kids. It's unbelievable. So, and they're coming great distances. So some kids are traveling, you know, they're up and traveling by 5 a.m. to get to school. And then to get back. And this is where partnerships with SEI become so important, because a student will come travel in the morning, get to Jefferson, spend the day at school, end up going to after-school programming where they get a meal and get help with homework or some extension of something that's of interest to them. And then they SEI helps them get home, right? And so some of this, the piece that we're realizing is that it's about a community, and sometimes the community is localized, and sometimes it's a little more. It has shifted, and I think that that's where, again, the power of SEI is so dramatic, because they can reach out a little more fluidly than we can as a school.
Well, I'm going to get ready to open the phone line, but before I do that, I want to make sure that people know that I am talking to Margaret Calvert, who is the principal of Jefferson High School, and there is a new tag that I keep forgetting, but I'm going to go back up and find it again. It is the Middle College for Advanced Studies, and we are talking to Troy Hollis, who runs the high school program at SEI. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello. I've got a grandson who's near his middle 20s. He's got brown skin. He's biracial. He's has been turned down 5 or 6 times for his social, as a child and as a young adult, for social security disability. And my daughter found out the last judge is known as a racist. Anyway, they gave up and they have a thick file. I want to, do you meet children like this in your work who probably should get have their disability income before they begin their life work? And I got to say something for me. You know, every day I live, I get punched in the face that this country has let down my grandchildren, my daughter, and me. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Joanne. We appreciate the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. So, you know, I love this program, and I do have a question about how to
So we have a student body at Jefferson that's very closely connected to Jefferson. It's the African American community. The African American community comes out in force anytime they think Jefferson's going to close or any changes are taking place at Jefferson. This college program, however, starts making Jefferson really attractive to people who would have never ever considered Jefferson as a high school option in the past. So how do we preserve the opportunity that we've worked to obtain for the African American kids that currently go to Jefferson? My fear is always that you get a great program. We've done the demographic shift, so most of those kids really don't live in the neighborhood anymore. So if you have priority, if you live in the Jefferson neighborhood, then the priority is going to shift relatively soon to a population that's radically different than the population that Jefferson has traditionally served. So how would either of you respond to that?
Well, excuse me. I will say first what we have to do is, it's not a secret, Jeff has got a negative rap over the years. And with that, we have to change the mindset of our parents, the mindset of our students, and get them to believe that you can come to Jefferson and have a good high school career. You can come to Jefferson and go to college afterwards and be college ready. I gain nothing in saying that,
right?
And I'm a member of this community. I grew up in this community, and I believe in this community, and I believe in Jefferson. The culture has changed. There's new leadership now at Jefferson. That's real leadership. Has the buy-in from the teachers and staff, and who is genuinely supportive of that, of this effort. And as soon as we get the buy-in from the parents and students to realize that they can come to Jefferson and it is a good option for us, then it will thrive. So that's our goal.
I guess my fear is just I want to make sure that Jefferson does thrive, but it thrives serving the student population that has historically been at Jefferson, right? So I hear what you're saying, but for me, I just think, you know, if I'm a parent, right, and, you know, I'm a middle-class white parent, but I just heard that I could get my kid a full scholarship if I sent him to Jefferson, I think I might be on my way to sending my kid to Jefferson, right? But, and so how do we prevent that? Let me get Margaret to answer it, and then you can jump in.
So one of I think that one of the real strengths of the vision of the development of the program. So you hear it from Dr. Gatewood, who's the president of PCC. You hear it from Tony Hobson from SEI. You hear it from me and Portland Public Schools, saying that the commitment is to serve the students who we built a program to serve the students who are already in the building.
Right.
So that's what the commitment was, to say we're not building. We're going to have Jefferson thrive because it supports the students who are in the building currently really well. And then we'll make sure that we do outreach and bring the other, you know, bring families in. And we're going to welcome families, obviously, into the program. So we really looked at what were the pieces that were going to support the students. So SEI is critical. PCC is critical. Looking at how do we do outreach in the neighborhood? Who are our connections to the Latino community, to the African American community? How are we working with families? And you know, Northeast Portland is going through gentrification. How do we bring cultures together? How do we have those conversations very openly? And I think to say we are going to be supportive of bringing groups of people together and honoring each of the experiences. But the design was certainly to say we're going to serve the students who are currently in the building really well, and how can we do that, and as well as do outreach. But I think that the pieces of the partnership, looking at the academic programs that historically have been successful, helping students really articulate what it is that is going to happen when they come to Jeff, has been tremendous. And I think that you hear it. Especially Dr. Gatewood speaks to it very often, is that he really sees this as an opportunity to transform a community. and that the commitment for PCC and the level of investment that's happened on the Cascade campus is tremendous. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing investment and conscious effort to pay attention mm-hmm. to who are the kids coming in, how can we serve them? Are we seeing dramatic shifts in the demographics? Mm-hmm. If they are, how are we going to respond? How do we preserve opportunities for students to maintain culture, connection to community, and redefining that, but being very aware, I guess, mm-hmm. and conscious. It's not, there's nothing that's happening here by accident.
Well, my point was a little bit smaller. Your answer was far, far better than anything I would have said. And mine was just more of a practical. Uh-huh. When you look at the scholarship beyond mm-hmm. PCC, it's a need-based scholarship. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not eligible for the federal Pell Grant, you can't go on. Like, you could still come to Jeff. Mm-hmm. And if I'm understanding that correctly, you could come to Jeff and you could go through the four, but you wouldn't be eligible for scholarship. The additional scholarship money if you're not eligible at the minimum for the federal Pell Grant. So that was just a practical
mm-hmm. so some
and thing the, that I was thinking about.
And the scholarships are tiered. So some mm-hmm. of them are more need-based. There are some that are purely academic. It's a mixture. Mm-hmm. But most of the components are need-based. And there's, I think, again, that both U of O and Dr. Gatewood at PCC have made strong statements about we're trying to find ways to help first-generation students gain access to college. Right. And so what are going to be those incentives? And one of them is going to be the scholarships, and the other is going to be making sure that that we are providing enough support that's tangible and over time. Like, it's not – any time you're making a transition, whether it's middle school to high school to college, students become vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And students that don't have support get mm-hmm. lost in the process. Mm-hmm. So part of what the partnerships provide is this opportunity to have, as Troy says, a caring adult walk with the student and a family every step of the way. So we build the bridge from middle school to high school. Then we build the bridge from high school to community college. Then we build the bridge from community college to college. Mm-hmm. And everywhere, and every time we make one of those crossings, there's an adult that's going with that student that should be known mm-hmm. to the family, that is trusted, that helps navigate it. So those are the pieces also that really factor into how do you support? What does it mean to support, I think, was one right. of your questions.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it raises a question for me. And so we've changed the environment inside the school. Mm-hmm. We've created a higher expectation that every kid in the building should be preparing for a college education now. And we can debate about whether mm-hmm. college is good for every kid, but mm-hmm. the vision is an excellent vision, right? Now, has that translated into a different perception of people outside of Jefferson? And I asked that question because as we were walking in, I talked about the police showing up for basketball games or any kind of games or any after-school activity that's happening at Jefferson, and kind of and I didn't talk about the demographic of those cops. Normally very new cops, very white cops, very visible gang jackets, and I've heard from community members that that sets an expectation. So the community sees cops in gang jackets at an event when kids are just coming out of a ball game or something, and they're like, why? Why do we have so many cops, so many young cops, and why are they interacting with the kids in the manner that they are? And I bet, Troy, you would probably be a better person to respond to that question. It's a big one, I know.
Yeah.
You can't see him sitting here shaking his head, but he's like contemplating this one because this is a big question. And I see it, and other adults bring it to my attention constantly. It's like, what if we've changed the inside environment so we've got higher expectations? What do we need to do to change how the police interact with young people at Jefferson and in the surrounding neighborhood?
You know, if you call a smaller person big
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again, they might start to look at themselves as being big.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
And I think over time, by having the police show up, kids start to think a certain way
mm-hmm.
about a school
right.
and about a community. And, you know, I don't have the answer to that. I don't know why they show up. I don't think the need for them to be there is that great. As a matter of fact, exactly. I know it isn't.
That's right.
It's just the overkill of it.
And so maybe that means we need to be having a conversation with Portland Police so that they understand that Jefferson is a new school. It's not the same school that they had an impression about before. But I can tell you that it just community members complain about that constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not complaining about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
They're complaining about the interaction of the young police officers with their gang jackets on with the kids as the kids are leaving a game or some evening activity at the school.
Well, can I ask a
sure.
follow-up question to that? So I guess my question is, So Jeff was redesigned, like this started a couple of years ago, this actual intentional piece. And then you had said earlier before we started talking that Jeff had undergone about 3 redesigns and it's had sort of a tumultuous history in the more recent past. So I guess the question is, it's great to say that you have all this programming and now we're talking mm-hmm. about it. It sounds like it's really... you know, it's really great and it's moving forward, but what is the impact in terms of inside the school? Are there still some of the things happening that, you know, drew the attention of the police in the first place? Well, I'm assuming that there were actually things going on that drew the attention of the police. Maybe that is a debatable point.
That is a debatable point.
So it is interesting because the next question I was also that's part of this is like, is the community bought into the idea of all these kids going to college? I mean, are there, you know, perceptions that, you know, college is only for certain people mm-hmm. and it's not for these kids and, you know, these kids are selling out by going to college and whatever. So it seems like it's sort of a multi-layered maybe issue.
So I guess I would say, I think at one point earlier I said that, you know, Jefferson opened in 1909, okay? And so there's 100 years of history of the role that the school has played in the community of Portland, and has changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably the biggest piece that I would say is there is a view of Jefferson from the outside. When you look at Jefferson from the outside looking in, it's very different than being inside the building and looking back out.
Mm-hmm.
And so our biggest challenge always is to have families come in and the community come in and see what Jefferson is. There's a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of history. And you change those perceptions literally one person at a time. So we know, I describe it a little bit of like a cell membrane. So we are a little living organism. And sometimes you have to reach out and, mm-hmm. you know, things go out of Jefferson and into the community. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the community has to come in order for the cell to grow and to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
So we do things, you know, our students are out in the community that's serving. They work at various internships and pieces. We dispel myths there. We have partners come in. And so and then that helps to dispel myths as well. And it's an ongoing process. So, I mean, I'm not going to shy away from the fact that there's a long history.
Mm-hmm.
It's a history that's been constructed often by people outside the building, and not by the people who actually have been inside the building. And so, that's just a reality that we deal with. But the pieces around how do you change that? And like for example, the fence around Jefferson has been a huge debate for. I don't know. It's been raging for years and years. There was probably a 12-year effort to try to get the fence down and get a different fence up. And so PDC has made it, the Portland Development Commission and the city has made a commitment to changing the fence. It seems like a small thing in some ways, but symbolically it's huge.
Mm.
And so it's as we go through and do this, it's about the intentionality of that.
Mm.
That's really, really important is that it's you have to operate on all the levels. So there's the educational piece within the building. There's a community piece that happens with SCI and PCC. There's the physical plant. What does the building look like? All those things play into how people respond mm-hmm. to what happens. And so it's a complicated answer, but I think that what is clear is that the partners are in. Like we kind of said, is this a real partnership? Everybody went all in. And so, you know, if we were at the poker table, everybody mm-hmm. anteed up, and then mm-hmm. we just pushed all the chips in and said, we're going to go. Mm-hmm. So that kind of level of commitment plays out over time.
Mm-hmm. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you want to join the conversation. We're talking to Margaret Calvert, who is the principal of Jefferson High School and the Middle College of Advanced Studies. It's Jefferson High School Middle College of Advanced Studies. Yes, it's going to roll off my tongue in just a matter of time.
It's a mouthful.
Hello, Clifford. Welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I've been listening to the conversation, and I hear the word community a lot, and the last lady started talking about the fence and the symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
And Jefferson High School sits in the middle of the Humboldt mm-hmm. Neighborhood Association.
Mm-hmm.
And the Humboldt Neighborhood Association really has not, it appears they have been locked out in the discussions of the redesign, because when you talk about symbolism, mm-hmm. that particular school is named after a person who was a race supremacist mm-hmm. who was in the business of buying and selling African people for money. He was in the business of breeding black people. And the symbolism to have a school in the Humboldt neighborhood that is the symbol is just absolutely disrespectful of people of color. That conversation has been avoided. And so the Humboldt Neighborhood Association some months ago had adopted a policy, and I don't know if the school... if the principal is familiar with the Humboldt policy, but since they are the centerpiece of the neighborhood, they should be familiar with the policy. The demographics have changed, and the new demographics are people who are, I won't say more educated, but they're very educated, and they're hip to the history of Thomas Jefferson, are affronted by the fact that they have a memorial to a racist in the center of the neighborhood. And I'd like to hear a little bit more discussion on that.
Thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
Have a good day. Anybody want to talk about, does the name matter? I know that Clifford brings this up at quite often. He thinks that the name should be changed. So any comments one way or the other?
You know, I think that this is, I think it has been, it's a piece that certainly deserves conversation. I think that part of the it's a complicated situation as well. And I think that engaging community around name is it's a complicated process, I guess. And I think that in starting the conversation, and I think it's good. You know, I think it's a worthy piece, but it's not going to be a simple answer.
And I wonder, he was starting to say that the neighborhood association had done something, so I don't know if they passed a resolution, mm-hmm. but he didn't finish that thought.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll find out about that later. But I mean, you know, of course that should be part of the conversation. I don't know, and I'll just say for me personally, I don't know that that's the most critical conversation to be having about Jefferson is the name. I think the more critical conversation is what happens to young people once they go in the building mm-hmm. and whether or not they're prepared for life when they come out. For me, that's the more mm-hmm. critical question. So other people may feel differently about that. The other thing is I think that there's a question about how do you change a community perception?
Mm-hmm.
because what I'm hearing is that things are happening differently in the building, and there are some new opportunities that didn't exist at mm-hmm. Jefferson a couple of years ago. But how do we get that information out to the public?
Repeatedly.
like you're doing this morning, think, right?
Yeah. I think it's... So you have to do it at multiple levels. And so one of the pieces is that you have to engage families early. So you have to talk with families, elementary age families. You have to talk with students as they make the transition to middle school. Mm-hmm. You have to talk with them throughout. You have to provide opportunities for families to see what comes out. You have to hear the voices of graduates. You have to hear the voices of parents who have said, this is the choice we made. We believe that everybody needs to choose to come to school at Jefferson. And that needs to be a conscious choice. What we know is that students who choose a high school and stay in a high school are three times, you know, if they complete their high school career in the school that they start at, they're mm-hmm. at least three times as likely to mm-hmm. graduate than students who move from school to school. I think that the piece about changing perception, it's multi-layered. Some of it is going out into the community. Some of it's bringing the community in. So, for example, this evening, one of the things that is not always well known is that our dance program actually is much larger than just the Jefferson dancers, right? So the Jefferson dancers are very well known, world renowned. But we have 171 students who participate in dance. So tonight at 7 o'clock, we have our semi-annual dance recital, which brings all the levels of dance to the stage into a tremendous event that brings people from the community in to celebrate the learning of students in this very authentic performance. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that that change. There's a lot of people walk in with, okay, I think this means that. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, well, okay, let's get underneath that and then demonstrate it. So mm-hmm. whether it's poetry slams, basketball games, dance recitals, mock trial competitions, any of the things like that, it's really a sense of how do you share what it is that's happening with students mm-hmm. and make it very visible.
Well, I want to go back to the dance program because mm-hmm. That's one of my Achilles heels. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about mm-hmm. that. But I want to tell our listening audiences about what's coming up today on KBOO. At 9 is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30 on A Deeper Look, the guest is attorney Tom Nelson, who will talk about the surveillance and infiltration of Oregon's Muslim community by the federal government. At 10, hear Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoint looks at how 4.3 million Palestinians were prevented from voting in Israel elections. We'll also hear about a program to train teachers in El Salvador. Thanks, KBOO listeners and KBOO members, for your support. If you're not a member, go online, click the tip jar, and become a member that way. I thought we had another caller, but it doesn't look like we have another caller. So I wanted to go back just a moment to the dance program because I don't know what the status of Jefferson's dance program is at the moment. The last time I was paying attention, it was my understanding that the program was going to be changed so that students in a dance program had to actually be students at Jefferson. And then I heard that that had changed back, that no, they weren't required to be students in order to participate in a dance program. So, Margaret, what is true?
As we went through and we said this, here's this inaugural year of this class of 2015. So we had been a comprehensive high school, our neighborhood high school, and we had offered, you know, students the opportunity to do what's called co-oping. So the dance program, students have come from across the city and actually outside the city to participate. And as part of the developing a focus option program, then we said that the class of students. Once we became this focus school, then, this piece about students being full-time, the dancers needed to be full-time students. So the class of 2015 and later, the students that want to participate in the dance program need to be full-time students in the fall of 2013, so like this coming fall.
Uh-huh.
So
so that change is happening. Change
is happening, and I think that, you know, part of the reality and the challenge is supporting families and making choices, right? Uh-huh. And so and helping to say here are the academic pieces that are present and the dance pieces. I mean, the dance program is tremendous. It's a pre-professional mm-hmm. training program, and there's no question it is a foundational piece. And so, again, it's how do you provide opportunities for families to take advantage of the dance and the academics? I mean, mm-hmm. we believe that there's great opportunities for both at Jefferson right now. So
right. Well, that makes me very, very happy to know that, you know, you have to be a student to go mm-hmm. to participate in a Jefferson mm-hmm. dance program.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do want to ask, mm-hmm. why are you at Jefferson?
Why am I at Jefferson?
Yes.
I'll give a brief history. So this is my fifth year at Jefferson as an administrator. So I spent 3 years as a vice principal, and then I became their principal in the fall of, last fall of 2000. So what, we're 2011, right? Mm-hmm. So why Jefferson? I believe that the dynamic nature of education is really exciting. So for me personally, I couldn't imagine doing anything else. This is nowhere else, no other career do you get to see students actually take advantage of opportunities, and you get to see adults and kids grow tremendously. So just in general, education is fantastic. In particular, Jefferson is truly one of the most exceptional places in Portland, in Oregon, and probably in the country. Really, really, a lot of misconceptions, but the work that happens inside the building, you have people that are committed to meeting kids where they are, developing them. They see the responsibility. We have just a tremendous teaching staff. We have great partners, and it's a great place to see the possibility of transformation. So it's an exciting piece, and I think that we are really, we're thrilled about the opportunity to see kids grow. Why, for me personally, I also live in the neighborhood. So my students, my kids, that go to Vernon, and so I'm of the community and from the community, and believe that in the sense of place that Jefferson offers.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you that because mm-hmm. it's clear that you have a passion for what mm-hmm. you do, and I had to kind of laugh internally because from the look on your face, it's like, well, gee, I don't think I've been asked that question in a while.
So I had a couple of questions in there directed at either one of you, and one is that if you could have a wish granted mm-hmm. about this program or about Jeff, mm-hmm. what would that be? And the other is, what do you see so far that has been just a real challenge? And that you, I mean, I'm sure you're doing things to address it, but just sort of the hard thing.
Well, I'll go to the challenge first and end on the positive.
Smart.
She's
woman.
An administrator.
I mean, honestly, the challenge in Oregon is around is funding. I mean, just in general. How we fund education is really poses challenges. So we feel it. Every place feels it, and so every place has to make decisions about limited resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the challenge. And how do you do that? And how do you continue in a series of declining resources over a number of years? How do you continue to say we're building things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the biggest challenge. If there's a way, I'm hopeful that you know, our in this environment right now with our legislature and the governor, that we'll see some differences. But we've been in years of declining resource at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So we need that to shift. That's just the immediate challenge. I think the thing that is that I'm actually most excited about are the partnerships. If I could say, if there's a wish, it would be that people could sort of suspend preconceived notions and actually hear what's happening, and then we can see how this gets delivered, right? But that is there's so many tremendous things that happen. There's a million wonderful, tremendous stories that come out of the building every day. And I just hope, I really just wish more people could hear it.
So on that note, and we're almost out of time, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention that Portland Public Schools is just starting this process to kind of restructure the feeder schools that feed into Jefferson. And I know it's early in that process. Any initial thoughts about whether that's going to make your life easier, harder, more challenging, or is that just a part of administration and Portland Public Schools?
Well, I'd say that, you know, what we believe, it's really critical, is that we want students in every part of the city to have tremendous educational opportunities. We're in challenging times, and so what you want to see is, what is it going to take to create situations where kids have great opportunities? So we were faced at Jefferson with some real challenges in the high school design process. I believe that we created opportunities out of that challenge. So whatever it is that comes through the enrollment and balancing process, it has to come out saying that the educational opportunities, that there are real solid educational opportunities for all the students.
And so these partnerships, I know SEI is a community nonprofit, so of course you guys write for foundations and corporate support and that kind of support to support your programming. Portland Public Schools gets to primarily most of its money from the state general fund, and I'm sure you're writing for grants and other supports to support special programming. And is that how these partnerships have come together? Have you come together and jointly written proposals, or are you just figuring out, I'm going to cover the cost for this, and then you're going to cover the cost for that?
Historically, before we came into the partnership, we got a lot of private donations, and that was able to support our programming. Portland Public Schools has given SEI a large grant to help out in this process.
Ensure that you can serve all the kids.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
And so that's what we're working off there at Jefferson now.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both. This hour's gone way, way, way too quick, because we could have spent a couple of more hours talking about what's happening at Jefferson now and what your vision is for the future. Margaret Calvert, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I'm so pleased that you're at Jefferson High School. Troy Hollis, very pleased that you're working with high school kids and doing the work that you're doing at SEI. Any final words either of you want to share before we go off into the day? Marie, thank you for joining me today. This has been fun. Now you see how it works from the inside, the bowels of the organization.
And I don't know that I'm happy to have spent my morning in a bowel.
Well, of course, you know, this is the bowels of democracy, the bowels of communication.
Feels better now.
Of engaging
it
the
public.
It feels
like we're moving.
We are moving. And I am Joanne Hardesty, and I've been slightly hinted that it is time for us to call this a day. I'll see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Teresa Mitchell will be up next. And next week, we will talk about health care for all. Have a great day. See you next week, same time, same place, same station.
Don't give up the fight. Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that bitter is cold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
sky. Take away everything and make everybody feel high.
And good morning from KBOO Portland. Your Thursday morning continues. Coming up at 9:30 on A Deeper Look, hosted by Linda Olson Osterlin, attorney Tom Nelson talks about the surveillance and infiltration of Oregon's Muslim community by the federal government. Coming up at 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15 on Flashpoints, a look at how 4.3 million Palestinians were prevented from voting in Israeli elections and a report on a program to train teachers in El Salvador. That's all coming up this morning. In just about a minute from now, though, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. And that's coming up next on KBOO.
Oregon's Muslim citizens, under surveillance and targeted by the federal government for infiltration and intimidation. Tune in to A Deeper Look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, and my guest, Oregon attorney Tom Nelson, both a Muslim himself and an attorney for many others who have been targeted by the federal government. He has a unique perspective on the pressure this part of our community has been under since 9/11. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m., Oregon's Muslim community targeted by the federal government. Right here on KBOO Community Radio.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. First headlines. This from Recombinomics.com. Tomorrow's